540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. A three-day ceasefire between warring factions is announced in Sudan's capital, Khartoum. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
I am deeply concerned about the terrible toll on civilians, the appalling humanitarian situation, and the horrifying prospects of further escalation.
American diplomats were evacuated over the weekend, and CBS's Nicole Skanger reports that the effort to pull out more Americans is ongoing.
The Pentagon says it is deploying two U.S. Navy ships near Sudan to potentially help with evacuations.
U.S. Africa Command and the Department of Defense continue to work closely with State Department, which has the lead for helping American citizens wishing to depart Sudan.
Several dozen Americans traveled in a U.N. convoy from the capital city of Khartoum to Port Sudan in the east.
Fox News has parted ways with host Tucker Carlson days after the network reached a more than $787 million settlement with Dominion Voting Systems over its 2020 election coverage. University of Virginia political analyst Larry Sabato.
This is a severe rebuke in anybody's book to Tucker Carlson, and directly, it's also a rebuke to Fox News, which supported Tucker Carlson for more than 6 years, almost 7 years.
CNN has cut anchor Don Lemon. He says he's shocked. In Montana, an environmental group is trying to stop use of an aerial fire retardant used by the U.S. Forest Service. More from CBS's Steve Futterman.
Foscheck is a popular reddish fire retardant that's been dropped from aircraft for decades to battle wildfires. But environmental groups say the retardant pollutes water when it gets into rivers and streams. The Forest Service argues the retardant is necessary, and if it can't be used this year, fires could be more destructive and more difficult to contain. In recent years, the Forest Service has tried to avoid using Foscheck within 300 feet of waterways.
In Kentucky,
hey, hey, hey. Oh, hey. Got to go. Hey.
Demonstrators gathered outside of the Carroll County Courthouse to protest the hiring by the sheriff's office of former Louisville police officer Miles Cosgrove. Cosgrove fatally shot Breonna Taylor in March 2020 during a serving of a no-knock warrant. He was not charged by a grand jury, but he was fired from the Louisville Metro Police Department for violating use of force procedures and failing to use a body camera. Comedian Richard Lewis posts a Twitter video message to fans.
I'm finished with stand-up. I'm just focusing on writing and acting. I have Parkinson's disease, but I'm under a doctor's care, and everything is cool, and I love my wife, I love my little puppy dog, and I love all of my friends and my fans.
Lewis says his health took a turn after wrapping season 12 of Curb Your Enthusiasm. This is CBS News.
Hire with minimal effort and maximum success with Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one.
The SHA 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Flooding is a concern in river communities in southwest Wisconsin. The Mississippi River in La Crosse has hit major flood stage and should get higher. Several streets are closed in Prairie du Chien. In Grant County, people are having to evacuate their homes. There's a hearing set for a Madison courtroom on May 4th challenging Wisconsin's restrictive abortion law. The state Justice Department plans to argue more recent legislation leaves the 1849 ban unenforceable.
We've argued that those recent laws impliedly repealed the 1849 ban. We've got really strong arguments.
That's Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call on WISN-TV's Upfront program. The case is expected to go all the way to the state Supreme Court. In sports, the Bucks try to pull even in their playoff series at Miami tonight. The Brewers host Detroit. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Accidents can be life-changing, no matter how careful you are. But with Gingras Thompson and Walks, you're not alone. For decades, they've been fighting for the rights of people just like you. They'll let you focus on your recovery while they handle the legal complexities. If you or a loved one has been hurt or killed due to someone else's negligence, contact them now. You may deserve compensation.
All in to win. Gingras Thompson and Walks. GTWLawyers.com.
If you have unfiled taxes or are in debt to the IRS, this is important news. The IRS just rolled out a new program to help struggling taxpayers more easily resolve their tax problems. It's called the Taxpayer Relief Initiative, and it opens up powerful new options for people looking to get back on the right track with the IRS. And no one knows this program like the professionals at Optima Tax Relief, America's most trusted tax resolution company. They've resolved over $1 billion in tax debt for their clients and have the expertise and experience to help you. One easy call to Optima can start the process, helping to put an end to your worries of wage garnishment, asset seizure, and other aggressive IRS actions. Make today the beginning of your fresh start with the IRS. Call the experts at Optima Tax Relief now for your free confidential consultation.
Call 800-343-6460. 800-343-6460. 800-343-6460.
Optima Tax Relief.
Some restrictions apply. For complete details, please visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24-7 at WAUKradio.com. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
Join us daily at TheRickSmithShow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is The Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to. Lots to talk about. Top story of the day on the social medias. Fox News mouthpiece Tucker Carlson is gone. Off the air, gone, effective, I guess, immediately. Big shock in the Tucker world, but gone. And, you know, the question that is now, you know, on everybody's mind, oh no, now where's a nation going to turn for bull? Where are we going to turn for our daily gorging of misinformation, hate, and outrage? Where are we going to go? Oh, where? I guess Americans are just going to have to figure out who they're going to hate themselves. No more Tucker to point you in that direction. And look, I've had a number of people reach out to me and go, do you believe all the horrible things? Do you think he was, you know, the misogynist, the homophobe, the white supremacist, the fascist, you know, all the things that they're saying? And I'm like, I don't care. If you're knocking elbows with white supremacists, does it matter if you believe it or not? You're a white supremacist. If you're knocking elbows with racists and homophobes and all of that, does it matter? Now, here, I've always said that I believe it's worse to know better and do it anyway. Because I've had this come up a number of times. If they're a true believer racist, are they worse than someone like someone who would pretend to believe it just for profit? I've always said that the person who knows better and still does it is much worse. And this is where I've always been. It's where I'm always going to be. So this is where we are. But does it matter, really? Does it matter to anybody? Now, the interesting thing is this was the top story in all of the places that I was paying attention to. And, you know, Don Lemon got fired and, you know, a whole bunch of stuff. And you go, does it matter? Because, you know, the story that I was thinking about today is the 10th anniversary. The 10th anniversary of the Rana Plaza factory in Bangladesh collapsing and killing 1,143 people and injuring more than 2,500 others. One of the, I think it's the fourth or fifth worst disaster for working people on the planet. And it got no mention, really. Not that I saw. And this is one of those moments where you go, there are things that are important and things not so much. And I look at Tucker because, look, there'll be another one. Tucker is not, he's not irreplaceable. There will be, trust me, there will be someone in Tucker's spot. And yes, they will, he will continue to, that person will spew the outrage, and that person will do all the things that have to be done to fleece the flock out of their money. It's that simple, because that's what it's all about. Rupert was right. It's not about red or blue. They don't care about your politics. They care about your money. It's about green. And while they're fleecing us and stealing from working people and doing more of this so they can divide us, we're not remembering where we are. And they're like, oh, that's Bangladesh. That's their problem. Yeah, but we're part of that. Because they feed our market. We buy these things. We wear the clothes that are made by the hands that work in these horrible conditions. And we used to be a labor movement that believed in an injury to one being an injury to all. So when I see these stories and I remember these anniversaries, because we should be able to do better. We should be sharing wealth much better than we are. And yet what we've got is we've got a gazillionaire class. We've got a wealth class in this country that, well, second to none. And not just here, globally, we've got a lot of really rich people. And I've had conversations with people over the years who are like, you know, well, you know, if they earned it, you know, if they worked hard, you know, they should, yeah, they can have $1 billion. Which is why when I saw Jesse Ventura, and this is one of those, I like Jesse Ventura. I liked him as a wrestler. I liked him as a governor. But when I saw Jesse given this spiel, I had to play it. Listen to Jesse Ventura.
There should not be one billionaire in America. None. And I'll tell you why. Because there is nobody that works hard enough to earn $1 billion. And my argument is this. The two jobs I did in my life that were physically the most demanding and mentally the most difficult that I ever did paid me the least amount of money. One was going through buds.
Yeah, well, he talks about going through the military and how difficult that was. He starts to swear here, and I can't play the profanity, but he talks about going through the military and how little he was paid doing that. And again, we put those folks up on pedestals. They're heroes. We worship them and then pay them little. And they talked about working for the highway department in Minnesota with an 80-pound jackhammer, you know, 40 hours a week, and you know, challenging a billionaire to go, you know, put your hands on a jackhammer 40 hours a week. You know, do an actual day's work. And this is where, you know, when I saw this bit by Jesse Ventura, I'm going, you know, this should be the battle cry of the working class in this country. Look, I want people to do well. I want them to lead good lives. But the fact that you're hoarding billions of dollars and then using it against working people is, well, it's disgraceful. So when I saw the CEO, and look, I've been talking about this forever. This is not new to any regular listeners. But when you start looking at CEO to worker pay being, you know, 3, 4, 500, 1,000, 5,000 times what the average worker makes, there's a problem there. And this is where we should go, no, I'm sorry, you're not worth 1,000 times the person who actually does the work. So I saw this story over at the Detroit News. The CEO of Ford, this Jim Farley, they reported on his compensation package, which in 2022, he put in his pocket $21 million. And they said, well, that's 281 times what the median annual total compensation of all Ford employees is. And they said that the annual compensation of a Ford employee is about $75,000. A good, decent, working class wage. Good wage. You know why? The majority of them are represented by the UAW, by a union who demands, you know, a little bit. And I'm going, but it's still 281 times. Does Mr. Farley, and look, I don't know Mr. Farley, but does he produce 281 times more value for Ford Motor Company than the person in the assembly line, the person who's painting the car, the person who's putting the bolts? Is he producing that kind of value? And the answer is no. I go back to, we've all heard the stories, you know, back in the 60s, GM CEO made 20 times that of the average worker. So my mind immediately goes to this place going, what if we lived in that day? What if we had 35% union density in this country where workers truly had a voice at work? What if we had a society and a tax code that said we're going to redistribute wealth in a way that producers and people who work for a living get a fair share? Think about what the average wage would then be if it was 20 to 1 on $21 million to Mr. Farley. Now, he wouldn't make $21 million, but imagine, think about that for a minute. The kind of distribution of wealth that our grandparents' generation demanded. And the thing is that generation, they were for the most part able to support a family on one income. Working families were able to make it with one income, one breadwinner. Dad goes off to work in the factory, mom stays home, raises the kids. That's the Leave It to Beaver era. You had vacation, you took vacations, you lived a decent life, you got to retire with some dignity and respect, all of those things that my grandparents lived through. Then we got into the 70s and 80s and into the 90s, where corporate America started saying, no, we're not touching those unions. We're going to start breaking them up. Thank you, Ronald Reagan, very much. And that 20 to 1 CEO to worker pay started going up. And now we're nobody blinks an eye when you see a story 300 to 1, 400 to 1. Nobody blinks anymore. Now what I get from people is, well, you know, if they earn it, they work hard. You know, I'm not going to begrudge them of that. Really? So now you went through an era of two income families. Mom had to go into the workforce because that's how we kept family wages up. It's how we kept food on the table, a roof over the head. And the statistics bear this out. Over the last 40 years, wages have stagnated and declined while the cost of living has skyrocketed. And the only way families can make ends meet was dual incomes. That's the only way. Now I argue we're in a different place. We're in a place where dual incomes no longer can do it. I think we now need three. I think we're in a three income situation. So unless we're talking about, you know, I don't know, going the multiple spouse route, I don't know how you get three incomes into a house other than someone working a job and a half, each partner working a job and a half, or one person working two full-time jobs or whatever, because we're not helping working families. I read a story today that pointed out that in Atlanta, the food bank there, the community food bank in Atlanta, shelves are empty. We're back to pandemic levels of hunger. Some of it's supply chain, some of it's getting there, but it's the fact that wages aren't keeping up. The cost of living is getting higher and higher. And congratulations. families are hungry. And wages are not doing it because they're not going up fast enough. They're going up a little bit. They're ticking up. But for the average working person, without some support, some voice in the workplace to grab a little bit of the obscene profits that are robbing us blind, it's only going to get worse. It's only going to get worse. Because again, Republicans aren't going to help. Democrats aren't doing much better. This is where organizing, this is where coming together and saying these are the issues that are important. All I'm hearing out of the House is nonsense. The question is how do we move in a direction that's going to get back to that ideal of one income supporting a family? Is it even possible? Are we too far down the road? Are we too far gone? I fear we are. But shouldn't we have a goal for the future? Shouldn't we have somewhere to go, you know? It would be nice. It would be nice to do better. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I want to hear your thoughts. Gonna take a quick break. Right back after this.
Mm-hmm. We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, hunger levels back at pandemic levels, families struggling to make ends meet, inflation not coming down fast enough, and what are the Republicans, what are they doing? What's their plan? Because, again, they're pointing all the fingers at Biden. It's all Biden's fault. If you watched any social media, the blue check mafia, they're pointing all at Biden. Biden did this by giving you $1,400. Biden did this by investing in infrastructure. Biden did this, and we're going to repeal all of it. And again, the plan, make things worse. And how? Well, we're fighting this debt ceiling thing. It's crazy what they're doing. But what we know is, and what Morgan Stanley's even saying it, this is going to cause a recession. This is going to hasten the speed at which a recession happens because they want 22% across the board cuts. The VA, 22% slashing of the VA budget. Imagine that. Again, remember, these are our heroes. These are the people we put up on the pedestal. The people that Jesse Ventura said the hardest job he's ever done for the lowest pay. And yet we've got billionaires. Now, according to Moody's Analytics, they say that if what McCarthy wants, if that plan to cut spending to lift the debt ceiling happens, it would mean an increase in the likelihood of a recession and almost 800,000 fewer jobs by the end of 2024 compared to just doing what they should do, and that is just raise the debt ceiling. Now, for my union brothers and sisters, if you listen to what McCarthy is saying, you listen to what the Republican plan is. It's to undo all of the spending that was in the American Rescue Plan. That's the goal, right? The goal is to all that stuff that hasn't been spent yet, we're going to undo. Because a lot of the money in the American Rescue Plan hasn't been spent. Now, remember their argument. Their argument is Biden spent all this money and we're going to claw back the money he hasn't spent. Because he spent all this money, but not really. And one of those areas, my union brothers and sisters, is the Butch Lewis Act. Now, for those who don't know what the Butch Lewis Act is, it's what helps shore up the multi-employer pension funds in this country, because there are a number of pension funds that were going to go bust, which means a bunch of people who worked their entire lives to get a pension were going to end up with basically nothing. So we helped working people. And most of that money hasn't been allocated yet. Most of that money is still in the process of getting where it needs to go. So if Republicans do what they want to do and what they say they're going to do, that means retirees, you know, my red hat wearing Trump Teamster buddies, that means your pension's screwed. So again, I look at this moment where be careful what you wish for. Because if Republicans get their way, if they can get all their wet dream list done, it means our pension system is screwed. It means, again, we're going to have a scenario where working people take it on the chin at the benefit of the very wealthy. More rich people, few more, lots more poor people. Something seriously wrong with that. Let's go to the phones. I got Alice on line one. Alice, how are we doing today?
doing okay.
What's on your mind?
So, a couple of things. First of all, so we have the Republicans who have absolutely no problem with giving all these tax breaks to the wealthy. And we're cutting the taxes and therefore bringing in less revenue. And then everyone's going, oh, well, we have to get rid of the assistance to the elderly and the poor. And what I've come to the conclusion from speaking to some people that they don't understand that this is our tax money that we are putting into helping others. So once again, we're letting off the wealthy because we're taking our tax dollars and we're helping people that need help. Whereas if we'd raised the taxes on the wealthy and the wealthy would also pay better wages, we could have more money overall. But, you know, that's right up there with the voodoo economics, too.
Yep. No, you're not wrong. This, again, is another one of these moments. You look at all these massive stock buybacks going on, the railroad industry, you know, billions of dollars in stock buybacks. Those should have been wages going to workers. Those should have been improvements into the industry so you have safer trains. It should have been used in a way that helps build us all up instead of just enriching a handful. And that's just not the railroad industry. It's industry after industry where these rich people have lined their pockets at the expense of everyone else. And I know, before I get someone, you know, emailing me, we've got pension funds. Yeah, we do. And they rob us blind every chance they get.
Absolutely. Look what they've done over the years to Social Security and even the postal workers' pension funds. But there you go. That's Republicans for you. Have a good evening,
Thanks,
Rick.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. No, again, you got Ron Johnson still running around in Wisconsin, you know, talking about Social Security's a Ponzi scheme. Well, you know who, you can believe whatever you want. You know what that is? That is the greatest anti-poverty program ever invented in this country. Because we, as a society, said, you're not going to have to work your entire life and end up living in poverty in your final years. We said that as a society. And what's interesting is the Republican vision of the future is desperation and poverty in your old age. If you're not fortunate enough, or look, you know, some people, I'm smart enough to save. If you're not lucky enough, you're not fortunate enough to be able to put money aside in your working years, your quote unquote golden years are going to be very difficult. And that, look, that's the mass of working people. You know, I was just reading a thing the other day, said something like, since we moved from the defined benefit pension to these wonderful 401ks, the baby boomer generation screwed, but not as bad as Generation X. And really not as bad as the millennials, because, you know, at least the baby boomers had something of a defined benefit. Some Gen X still had some defined benefit pensions, me being one of them. And then everyone else is, hey, sorry, you didn't make enough money to squirrel some aside? Well, that's just tough luck on you. And we're heading towards a moment where there's going to be a catastrophe. You're not going to have the turnover, the churn of older workers retiring and younger workers being able to take their positions. And Social Security hasn't risen to the point where it can take on that. Remember how the social compact was set up. Social Security was one leg of the three-legged stool. A defined benefit pension was another leg of that stool. And your personal savings. So the idea of, like I have, going to have Social Security. I've got a defined benefit pension through the job I had for a bunch of years. And my 401k that I put money into, my personal savings. My stool is going to be okay. Everybody else has seen their legs whittled away. And right now, most people, all they've got left is Social Security. And Republicans want to take that last leg and beat them with it. People like Ron Johnson want to do away with it. Privatize it. Why? Well, so the wealthy can benefit off of that as well. All of these privatization schemes that have come up over the last 30, 40 years, none of them have worked for working people. None of these gimmicks and these schemes that the really smart economic wizards in the Reagan years and in the Bush years, none of that stuff ever worked for working people. That's not to say it didn't work. It worked exactly as it was supposed to. It made the wealthy wealthier and much more powerful. It took the power of government out of the hands of we the people, and it made we working people desperate. worked exactly to a charm the way it was supposed to. Not the way it was sold, mind you, but the way it was supposed to work. And this is where, you know, we're arguing over bathrooms instead of talking about what the future of the working class in this country is. It's frightening where we are. And the question I have is, when do we say enough is enough? And I'm telling you, I keep coming back to, we need a working class revolution. We need.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
CBS News Brief. With a 72-hour ceasefire between warring factions in Sudan, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan says evacuations of Americans there continue.
We have deployed U.S. intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance assets to support land evacuation routes, which Americans are using, and we're moving naval assets within the region to provide support.
Tucker Carlson is no longer with Fox News. No reason given. It comes less than a week after the network reached a settlement with Dominion Voting Systems. CBS's Robert Costa.
He has been a highly rated figure for many years, someone who was had a convening power for those who had ambitions inside the Republican Party, especially on the presidential level or on the congressional level.
Bed Bath & Beyond files for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, and CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger says one reason why.
The rise of online retailers ate into the Bed Bath & Beyond business. The company itself acknowledged that they had missed the boat on internet retailing.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
WAUK 540 AM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUKradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matt-Mayer. Here's what you need to know. A bipartisan measure by Wisconsin lawmakers would change the criteria needed to expunge criminal records. Under current state law, someone can ask a judge for expungement only if the crime was committed before they turn 25. The new measure removes the age limit. The bill, sponsored by Republican State Representative David Stephan of Green Bay, makes certain crimes like stalking, violating a restraining order, criminal trespass, criminal damage to a business, and traffic offenses ineligible and does not apply to felonies. In order to apply for expungement, a year must pass after completing the sentence, as well as paying outstanding court fees or restitution. Gas prices are down almost 9 cents in the last week. The average gas price across Wisconsin is $3.44 a gallon, 21 cents higher than a month ago, and 40 cents per gallon lower than a year ago. I'm Jane Matt-Mayer. This is Civic Media News.
Accidents can be life-changing, no matter how careful you are. But with Gingras Thompson and Walks, you're not alone. For decades, they've been fighting for the rights of people just like you. They'll let you focus on your recovery while they handle the legal complexities. If you or a loved one has been hurt or killed due to someone else's negligence, contact them now. You may deserve compensation.
All in to win, Gingras Thompson and Walks, GTWLawyers.com.
Hi, this is Lindsay Kynard at 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK The Shaw. Here are upcoming events happening in the area. Come check out Milwaukee Trivia History Night at Urban Tea Cafe downtown this Wednesday at 7 p.m. presented by the Milwaukee County Historical Society, where there will be prizes for the top three trivia winners. On Thursday, April 20th, drop in for free, family-friendly art projects at the Wustum Museum presented by Racine Arts Museum Association. Kids ages 4 and up are welcome with their parents to create an unforgettable art project from 3:30 to 5 p.m. And finally, join the Sunset Playhouse in Elm Grove all weekend long and view the production of Young Frankenstein, evenings at 7 p.m. or view the matinee on Sunday, April 21st at 2 p.m. For tickets, call 262-782-4430. If you have an event you'd like us to share, let me know. Email me, Lindsay Kiner, at info@civicmedia.us.
MyShiro always goes the extra mile, stretches every dollar, puts others first. But now it's your time, Mom. Get free tips to help boost your retirement savings now at aceyourretirement.org.
Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Life is simple if you view it from the heights of Wall Street. Thank you, Steve. Now, go away.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, you may remember, last week we were in D.C. for the Patriotic Millionaires event. And yes, they're talking about raising taxes on rich people, people like them. And I do find it interesting that the right never misses an opportunity to try and undermine what those folks are doing. But the reality is they're saying, look, tax us. We need to spend this money in a better way. And I think the narrative has to be, we've got to be talking about taxes as a matter of everyday policy. Because a lot of people glaze over, their eyes get upset. Nobody wants to pay taxes. And we're trained like Pavlovian dogs. So anytime we hear the word tax, we start to foam and get upset. So how do we change that? Well, maybe we start talking to people earlier. Had I known about taxation and progressive taxation younger, maybe I would be a little smarter, a little more down the road. That's why I find it interesting that there are some folks who are trying to do that. And that's what my next guest has done. Amy Hanauer is the executive director of the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. She's one of the grantees from the W.K. Kellogg Foundation's Digital Storytelling Program. And taxes seems to be her story time. This I got to hear about. Amy, I appreciate you taking time for us.
Yeah, great to talk to you, Rick.
So how do you talk to kids about taxes? How is taxes something we're supposed to hate? Death and taxes, only inevitable things. How do we talk about that with kids?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's the thing is you got to recognize that taxes are like how we make the decision about who's going to get what in this country, right? And so we've got a country where inequality has just been soaring and growing for decades now, incredibly concentrated wealth. And at the same time, like compared to a lot of other places around the globe, we don't do as much to make it easy to raise kids. You know, we don't have free childcare. We don't have paid leave for working parents. We make it really hard for working class kids to afford college. We make it parents can't even take paid time off when they have a kid. It's not a guaranteed thing in most jobs. So if we want kids to thrive in America, I think we really have to start with fair taxes. And it's the way we can deliver the essentials to children and families and parents.
Yeah, see, I argue that Leave It to Beaver era of our grandparents' generation was made possible by a progressive tax code and strong union density. Those two things were the magic sauce of that era that gave people the ability to survive on one income and raise a family. And as they were breaking that down, you know, now we got two income families. And I argue right now, maybe you'll agree or disagree, I think we're in the three income range right now just to support a family because things have gotten so out of whack and wealth so badly distributed away from people who work to people who, well, move money from one pocket to the other.
Totally, 100%. And it's like, you know, if how are you supposed to pay for childcare? Like we're looking at costs that center-based childcare for one kid can cost more than $10,000 a year. But, you know, that's like just not an amount that most people have to spend. You look at college debt, right? The average college graduate owes more than $37,000 in student debt, and many people owe a lot more than that. And you think back, right, 40 years ago, you could work a minimum wage job in the summer and maybe on some weekends during the school year. And between the fact that tuition was a lot lower and the minimum wage was a lot higher, that was enough to pay for college right there.
Yeah, I've got a lot of friends who are, you know, 10, 15 years older than me, who tell that story. I have a friend who went all the way through the University of Michigan, undergrad, law school, working as a waitress, living in a crummy apartment, driving a crappy car, but walked out of there with a law degree and zero debt.
That's right.
That's unheard of. That's impossible today. Unheard of, but impossible.
Impossible. And like, you know, it's become harder and harder, right? Like you can't really send your kids out the door and down the street to the playground by themselves, right? Something that maybe, I don't know, that was something certainly I did in my childhood. But, you know, there were more eyes on the street. It wasn't, as you said, people weren't working three jobs to support their families. And it was just kind of an easier situation. So look, we've got such extreme wealth and we could tax wealthy people and corporations and use that revenue for paid leave, for childcare, for education, for healthcare, And it would be good for kids of every race. It would be good for kids all over this country. So I think it makes a lot of sense. And if you look at the fact that we have 55 profitable corporations in 2020 pay zero in taxes, right? If you look at the fact that you've got some of the wealthiest billionaires on the planet paying almost nothing in taxes, and yet you've got waitresses and construction workers and teachers, you know, they get their taxes deducted out of every paycheck. They can't cheat.
Right.
But the really wealthy can.
But isn't this the argument, Amy? And this is where I have a lot of my working class brothers and sisters going, this is why we need a flat tax. We have to have a flat tax, Amy. Is this an argument for that?
Absolutely not. Because the problem with a flat tax is that a flat tax is an upside down tax, right? Because it means that people who are kind of living off of their paycheck to paycheck are paying the same percentage of their income as the very wealthy in income taxes, but they're already paying a higher share in sales taxes because they got to spend everything that they bring in, right? They're paying a higher share in property taxes because, you know, they're spending more of their income on housing. And they're paying a higher share in the payroll tax, which is, you know, the tax that goes to Social Security, the FICA tax on everybody's, you know, you see it on your paycheck whenever your pay stub comes out. And that, so you end up with an upside down tax code where lower income people are paying a higher share. It should be the opposite. We should make sure that the wealthier you are, you know, everybody pays the same amount on the first $50,000 in income. Everybody pays the same amount on the next $50,000 in income. But if you make $1 million, you can pay more on the share that's over 100,000 or over 200,000. And that is what I think makes a much more fair tax code.
Yeah. Now, I played a clip of Jesse Ventura, former governor of Minnesota, saying we should have no billionaires, none. And I agree with him. I've been saying this for years that it just should not happen in our society. But what's happened is we've rigged the tax code so badly, we've rigged the employment situation so badly that we've got not just a handful of billionaires, we got what, like 1,500, 1,800 billionaires now certified. And I'm sure there's a couple more that sneak in there. And I'm sorry, I don't see how that's good for society.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's not. And I don't even think it's good for the billionaires, to be honest. You know, at this point, the estate tax is such that people can pass on, a couple can pass on $25 million totally tax-free. And that's before they start socking away more of it in trusts and other kind of loopholes. And, you know, how is that good for a kid, right? To inherit $25 million? How is that promoting that kid's work effort?
And I don't know. I think I would have been pretty happy with it. I just wasn't fortunate enough to be born in that situation.
I don't know if you would be, man. They spend their whole life trying to justify that they deserve that money. I think people are better off if they, you know, everybody should be able to inherit grandma's house or whatever. Yeah. But $25 million, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you listen to Elon Musk or you listen to Donald Trump, you know, they got, I guess, 1 million each or 100,000 or something. They got something. Now, it wasn't 25 million, but they worked for it. I'm not sure where I was going there other than.
Yeah, I think Trump inherited a little more than that.
Other than the fact that, you know, even they are embarrassed by inheriting that kind of wealth.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
I mean, you know. No, I worked for it. No, you didn't. You had the invisible capital of a name. You had the invisible capital of all the contacts that come along with that. And they've sold working people on this idea that they had to pull themselves up by the bootstraps too, so you could be just like them. And the sad reality is most working people are not going to be able to. So we should have a tax code that rewards work, which is why I like with one of the things that the Patriotic Millionaires were talking about was raising that individual deduction to a living wage deduction. And I think that is a fabulous idea and would be enormously helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and absolutely. And actually, the Patriotic Millionaires were talking about some non-tax things, too. Right. They were talking about raising the minimum wage. And, you know, again, it's kind of this combination of things where too many jobs just don't pay enough to get by. And then we're cutting the services that would, you know, that you'd kind of use alongside a job to make your life work, right? Like you need affordable transportation, you need your your roads not to kill your car, you know, kill your car when you drive down the street. And, you know, you need to be able to send your kids to a decent school. And in so many parts of America, those things just aren't a given.
No, I'm right there with you, Amy. So last line of questioning I've got for you, because, you know, I think we have to have this conversation every day. And I know taxes are not something sexy and to get really excited about. But the reality is you go back to the socialist President Dwight Eisenhower's tax code. You know, corporations were paying considerably higher than they're paying now. The wealthy were paying enormously high. Well, what was the corporate tax rate in 53? What, about 56%?
There was a point when it was up to 90%.
Not the corporate.
Sorry, the tax on billionaires. And so you know, that's, I think, the irony is that you'll have people implying that trickle down works, when in fact the time that this country had the fastest growth, when incomes were growing across the board, you know, black, white, middle income, low income, high income, everybody's income was growing, life expectancies were growing, you know, education levels were growing, and that was at the time when we had the highest level of taxation. And corporations were doing just fine. Yep. Because you had a lot of people able to buy the products, you had people living longer, you had, you know, you had workers who could afford to retire. And it made a lot more sense in a lot of ways.
You still had rich people. So, you know, 1952, top corporate rate, 52%. Now, because of Trump, down to 21%. You know, that same year, top marginal tax rate on rich people, 92%. Now you're looking at 37%. And actually, it was down to 28% during the Reagan years. And you wonder how we got this upside-down wealth situation going on. Is what we redistributed from people who actually work to the folks who don't. And I go back to that premise. You know, when we had a tax code that had, you know, some progressivity to it, there was a reason to pay higher wages. There was a reason to reinvest. Now we got stock buybacks. We're taxing at one measly, rotten percent. Really?
Yeah, right. And then you look at Best Buy, right, who threw away all their money on stock buybacks and are put, you know, closing down, and workers aren't even going to get any retirement security at all. It's a shame, but it's easy to fix, right? I mean, it's just a matter of will. And the fact is, most people want most of this stuff. Like, most people think that billionaires should pay more. Most people don't think that there should be, you know, money that goes totally untaxed, which there is right now because of the stepped up basis where you can, you know, have your wealth accumulate. And then if you die without selling it, all that wealth just vanishes into thin air. Most people think corporations should pay. And so, you know, there's a lot we could do if we just had politicians who weren't kind of in the pockets of the very wealthiest lobbyists.
And it comes back to us, and why I think what you are doing and what you're doing with the Kellogg Foundation is important. I hope you'll check out the website, everychildthrives.com. Well, they'll find your piece there, right?
Yeah, that's right. And they can go to ITEP.org too, which is ITEP, my organization, Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. Find a whole mess of stuff on how, you know, how the rich get away with paying less and how we can fix it all.
There you go. Good stuff. We'll get links out on social media. Amy Hanauer, I appreciate you taking time for us. Thanks so much. Great piece. Again, I hope you'll come back and share with us again in the near future.
Always great to talk to you, Rick. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Amy. Good seeing you again. Again, you want to check out that website, itep.org, ITEP.org. You'll get lots of information there. Also, everychildthrives.com, the website, if you want to check out the pieces that they're doing there. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people on the talk.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1999. A headline from the Los Angeles Times declared dock crews to halt work in support of death row inmate. Up and down the West Coast, the ports stood silent. The International Longshoremen and Warehousemen's Union had called their members off the job for a one-day strike. They did this to protest the death sentence for Mumia Abdul-Jamal. Mumia was a black activist and journalist who was on death row accused of killing a police officer in Philadelphia. Yet many peace and justice activists in the United States and beyond have questioned the evidence leading to his conviction. In October of 1998, the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court rejected an appeal from Mumia. Jack Heyman, a member of the executive board of the Longshoremen's Union in San Francisco, explained the context of his union's protest in a piece he wrote for the San Francisco Chronicle. He wrote, quote, "Labor and minorities share a common history of being victimized by the criminal justice system in this country. Both have long been aware of police repression and the unequal use of the death penalty against minorities and the poor. From the Haymarket Martyrs, who rallied workers for the eight-hour day, to Harry Bridges, the Longshore Union leader targeted for deportation for being a red, to the Black Panther Party, whose program of self-defense put it on the FBI's list." In San Francisco, longshoremen chanted, "An injury to one is an injury to all. Free Mumia Abdul-Jamal." Protests against Mumia's execution took place across Europe in cities like London, Madrid, Dublin, and Amsterdam, and by unions in France, Brazil, and South Africa. After 30 years on death row, Mumia's sentence was commuted to life without parole. He is still in prison.
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I get it a lot from people going, "Oh, you talk about taxes too much." No, taxes, this is how we fund the things we want. It's how we have decent infrastructure, how we fund education, how we pay for the military we all love to talk about. This is how past generations were able to distribute wealth in a way that society as a whole got better. And look, when we were talking amongst the patriotic millionaires, one of their common fears is they know they've got it good. They know they're okay. They worry about the pitchforks coming out when the next recession hits. And look, Republican policies over this debt ceiling are moving us in that direction. They know that it could be their heads on platters. There's a lot of self-interest in the patriotic millionaire saying, "Hey, tax us, use our money in a way that's going to benefit society." It seems logical. Let's quick go to the phones. Got Grayson on line one. Grayson, how you doing today?
I'm doing really, really well, Rick. Thank you for taking my call.
What's on your mind, brother?
I think you put it very well there. They're scared, and I think that it is actually the fear and the needs of the very wealthy that's driving the debt ceiling plan, and specifically the fact that there are these enhanced work requirements, totally new work requirements for Medicaid and enhanced work requirements for SNAP. I think that they have come to see, look, you have a bunch of low-wage workers who are never unionizing, never fighting back in any way, and now they're unionizing all across the country. They're demanding better wages. They're willing to quit their jobs. They're making up all this like media rhetoric around like the term quiet quitting. So they're thinking, okay, maybe they're getting a little too comfortable and we're going to have to take away their health insurance so that if they decide, oh, yes, I'm going to quit my job because they're not paying me very well, or I'm going to wind up unionizing and going on strike, that they're going to lose their health insurance through Medicaid, which is how these low-wage workers are getting their health coverage, and then tightening up things on SNAP, which already had work requirements. So it seems like it's less about saving the government money in their budget and more about disciplining labor and stopping labor organizing, both in the formal sense and in the more informal, people quitting their jobs and deciding that they won't take those bad conditions anymore. Because now you won't even have health insurance if you go ahead and you fight back against the boss in the slightest way.
No, you're absolutely right. In fact, we've been talking about that for months now. And it doesn't even have to be conspiratorial, Grayson. The Federal Reserve said we need to make more layoffs so that the job market isn't as tight, so that workers aren't as willing to quit and then go on strike. None of this stuff should be a surprise to working people. But what's surprising to me is, you know, just how easy it is for the Republicans to go ahead and push for the things that are going to do exactly what you said without fear of consequence from you, me, or anybody else, or the people that it's going to affect. That's the surprise part to me.
Yeah, I think it's because they've gotten comfortable in the fact that they got the House in the last election. They've gotten very comfortable with it. And I was actually an organizer in the Tea Party movement back eons ago before coming to the left. And the one thing that I've seen and that I think they might repeat again with this recession is that they can twist the rhetoric to make it seem like for those who are in the middle class, upper middle class, those types of people, even the lower middle class, get them to believe the reason why the economy is so bad is because there are people that are taking handouts and that there's too much money being given out by government, and the whole taxed enough already shtick might be coming right back, because they know how to twist it in a way that people believe, basically gaslight themselves into believing that they and people that are closer to them in economic proximity than the wealthy people are actually the problem, instead of pointing to the actual problem.
No, you're so spot on.
They've gotten too comfortable with the ability to use rhetoric.
No, I mean, that's spot on.
And
look, you know, as a former Tea Party organizer that you say you were, I remember at the beginning telling my labor friends that you should be getting involved in this Tea Party movement because it's your issue. It's jobs. It's manufacturing. It's the stuff that working class people should have been taking over. And sadly, it was co-opted by the wealth class, the Americans for Prosperity, and those groups who heavily funded that to make it take a really radical right-wing turn. But at the beginning of it, I was all on board. Yeah, let's talk about jobs. Let's talk about reshoring manufacturing. And let's talk about taxes, because I think the working class is taxed enough. We're not taxing the billionaires. That's the problem.
Yes, it's that bigger picture that they deliberately don't want you to see, and people just don't get it. And that's why I'm so glad that there are voices out there like yourself that are willing to say that over and above all the noise that's going out there.
No, I appreciate it, Grayson. Thank you so much. I'd love to hear
Thank
from
you
again.
You have a great day.
Thanks so much. No, this is, again, you know, I go back to this, and I remember this, and I'm glad Grayson brought this up. I remember this like it was yesterday. When the first Tea Party group started under this guise of, we're taxed enough already. And for those who don't know what tea means, that's what it means. And I remember telling my labor friends, look, get people to these meetings. Educate these people, because these folks, they're the talk radio crowd. The talk radio crowd got them in the room. They're active. They're engaged. They're angry. Get in there and educate them on labor issues. Get in there and talk to them about actual tax policy instead of letting the right fill their heads with Fox and with all of the right-wing blather and all of the, it's the others' fault. It's all of this social spending. It's all of those people who are doing this to you. The guy who stood up in, you know, not too far from where I live and said, if you get your government hands off my Medicare, had there been someone in that room to say, whoa, buddy, you do realize Medicare's government program. You do get that, right? Had someone sat him down and talked to him a little bit, probably would have been a different outcome. And this is the place where I keep coming back to time and time again. We've got to be talking to working class people and educating on the issues that are really important. And the tax issue is right there, one of the most important issues that we've got going on. Seriously, it is one of the most important things. Because if they continue to rob us blind, they continue to pocket the wealth and the fruits of our labor, there's a serious problem. And this is why I think I'm hopeful. I am hopeful. Let's quick go to the phones. I got real quick Lewis on line two. Lewis, how are we doing today?
I'm doing all right, Rick. Thanks for taking my call. I've been listening to what you're saying tonight, and brother, you are hitting it out the park. Everything you're saying is on point.
Appreciate
and
it, brother.
I just wanted to add, excuse me?
Appreciate it.
Yeah. I just wanted to add, you know, when you were talking about why it takes two and three paychecks to make it, you know, the problem is this, right? Like you said, during the middle of the 20th century, all these programs, defined benefits and, you know, and making more money go down to the workers, it worked fine. You know, there was nothing wrong with what America was doing in this middle part of the 20th century. As you said, incomes are going for everybody. Now, because of this kind of fetish on neoliberalism, It's running the country into the damn ground, you know? And being a former academic, I know the damage it's been doing to higher ed. So, you know, I agree with you. We really need to come together and say enough is enough. And I just want to say, you know, in regards to working people, that category, we all need to think of it as being expanded, because the research I've done, you have people who have done everything right and had these nice white-collar, you know, professional jobs, and they're struggling paycheck to paycheck.
Yep.
And it has nothing to do with the fact that they bought too many luxury cars or spent too much on their home. The two biggest expenses, as you know, education and housing.
That's it.
And it impacts every.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.